Well, there isn't any way that you could start what we're trying to talk about, I think, without talking about love. That's the start of the whole thing. So if you don't mind, turn to Luke chapter 10. We'll read just a little bit there. And I know that's a real familiar passage to you, but it really makes the point. Jesus makes the point there about how fundamental that is. This is the beginning part of the Good Samaritan. So verse 25, we'll read just a couple of verses. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, What is written in the law? What is your reading of it? So he answered and said, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered rightly. Do this, and you will live. This passage, along with Matthew chapter 22 and other passages, emphasize the fact that love is the most important thing. And it's the greatest commandment. And everything cascades down off of the whole premise of love. So I just want to ask you, do you think about it a lot? Is it something that just kind of happens in your life? And I'm telling you, it seems that way with me sometimes. I have to get hit in the head so often. And I'm glad God hits me in the head to get me back on track with things like that. Bonnie Raitt, I like Bonnie Raitt. She's a good singer. She's got a song that says, you can't make a heart feel what it doesn't feel. Well, she's talking about infatuation. And that's true with infatuation. But it's not true with love. You know what you and I have got to do? We've got to look at our heart about love and make sure that we've got it in the right place. So I was going to talk about that this morning, just a little bit, this passage in Luke. And what we've got to do is we just got to look in our hearts. And I'm telling you, I don't care who you are, you know. Man, woman, teenager, it doesn't make any difference. From time to time, we have got to be courageous enough to admit what we think in our heart. And I'll tell you why we got to do that. It's because we're going to be judged about that. Now, you know, that's kind of in your teeth kind of a thing. I'm up in your grill, as the old saying goes, about that kind of thing. But I say that because I need my grill got up into a lot of times about this. Because I'm telling you from personal experience, it's so easy just to let that slip. And if we talk about anything, we talk about encouragement to evangelism or anything like that, that is just the fundamental premise in all of this. So Bonnie Raitt's wrong. And we're going to talk about how wrong she is as we deal with all of this. It's called the greatest commandment, and it's done so for a lot of different reasons, as we've already talked about. And I've heard Ed Harrell preach a number of different times, and he preaches out of Luke chapter 10 on hermeneutics, which I think is really great. Because people, they get all gnarled up about hermeneutics, and they get complicated about it and everything. And this passage is one of the great passages on hermeneutics. The guy asks a question, which is the greatest commandment. Jesus says, what do you read? Simple as that. You know, people want to complicate things, and Jesus just said, what do you read? And Jesus was going to tell him, and if the guy got it wrong, he said, no, that's true, but that's not the most important one. But the guy got it right. And he got it right because we can come to those fundamental truths and understand that. So Statistics kind of interest me sometimes. The word love is used, and this depends on which version, you know, you're using and which lexicographical authority. I mean, you go on the internet and you can find a lot of different variations of this. And I know that. I'm not trying to say this is absolute. But 571 times, 319 in the Old Testament, 252 in the New Testament. I just make a point about this. I don't know why it was, but it seems like a lot of people in my generation missed the point that there's grace in the Old Testament. I don't know why they missed that. I don't know why I got it and they didn't, because usually I'm the one who didn't get stuff, and they did. But I did understand that there was grace in the Old Testament. Now I understand that the Old Testament is a lot bigger than the New Testament, so when you start talking about these relative numbers, I mean, so, but whatever. Yeah, the Old Testament talks about grace. In fact, you know, you've got Jesus and a lawyer talking about the Old Testament and about grace. And so it was there. It's always been there. It's always been from the time that Adam was created. It's always been the greatest thing that God ever sought. And it's been the greatest thing that God ever taught to mankind. And so, since that's the case, I gotta make sure that I'm on the right page when it comes to understanding love. So, you know, you think about the Good Samaritan. Well, that really is a story about love, is it not? And it's a story about a lack of love, too. You got the priest and the Levite who, yeah, they just stepped over the guy. And they shouldn't have done that. And they stepped over him because they didn't love him. And they didn't love him because they didn't love God. I mean, it just goes round and round with all of that. And that's what that's about. And you got the prodigal son. Prodigal son. I don't know a whole lot of ways sometimes to get people's attention when we start talking about love. And so, I'm going to talk about my brother right now. And I just don't do this. And I don't do this for a lot of reasons, which you'll be obvious whenever I get through talking about my brother. But my brother's dead. My younger brother died 15 years ago. And he died of AIDS. And it was a bad death. It wasn't as bad as it could have been, but it was pretty bad. And I always made fun of queers. I don't mean that in an unkind kind of way. I'm just telling you a word that's my culture, you know. And he did too. I mean, we were brothers. We're only 2 years apart, shared the same bedroom, just did all kinds of things together. I loved my brother, and I would have died for him. But he fell into a homosexual lifestyle. And I kind of suspected it. About a year or two, I guess, before he told my family that he had AIDS, I told my wife, Becky, I said, "Honey, I hate to say this, and I've never told anybody this but you, but I think Paul's a homosexual." And she looked at me like I had fallen off of Mars and that I'd cursed or something. She said, "Oh, no, you know, what in the world makes you say that?" Well, it turned out to be true. And he had shielded it for a long time. Now, here's my point. It is utterly and completely revolting to me, the whole deal about that. And I had no use whatsoever for anybody like that. I didn't want to be around them. I mean, you know. Once again, and I know the young people may not be understanding this, because your culture is different than my culture, particularly Alabama in 1950 and all of the stuff that went on there. So, but I'll tell you what, this was my brother. This was Paul. I mean, I can't tell you how much I loved him.
And I can't tell you how much I was willing to forgive him. I didn't care what he had done. It didn't make any difference. And so, that was a horrible situation, and he repented of his sinful lifestyle, and he struggled, but he truly, absolutely repented, and my mom and dad and my sister and me and my wife were by his bed when he breathed his last, and I just cried. I cried because I was happy that he had gone to heaven. He didn't need to be suffering anymore. And it really got me to thinking about, oh, you claim to love people? Are you doing some superficial, topical, it depends on who it is kind of a thing in your life? I mean, it really got me to thinking about that. And one of the reasons I don't talk about this hardly ever is because I don't want to use my brother, my love for my brother's death, the whole circumstance around that. It's just some point to be made in some sermon, because I don't think of it like that. So I'm telling you, I'm asking you to think about this. We talk about the prodigal son. His older brother hated him, didn't he? I mean, that's the whole thing about that. His older brother had envisioned all of the sinful things that his younger brother had done. And I do not believe that the older brother envisioned them with some desire in his heart. I think he was repulsed by it. So I think the older brother was a good moral man. But being a good moral man doesn't mean you got the right love in your heart. It just doesn't. And sometimes it kind of takes a rough situation for me to stop and start evaluating what love's all about. And you know what? I mean, it's true with all of this. The rich man and Lazarus. Lazarus wanted to eat the garbage in the rich man's trash can, and the rich man wouldn't even give him that. I mean, that's basically what's going on there. And it would have helped Lazarus. He would have probably been healthy. I mean, you know, but the rich man, talk about stepping over somebody. He laid him at the rich man's gate, and he literally stepped over him all the time. What kind of heart does it take to do something like that? And that's why the rich man wound up in torment. And even when he's in torment, all he can think about is his own brother. So you can see the darkness of that heart manifested there in all of that. Love is the thing. And I mean, you know, I know you know that. I know you know that. And I guess nowhere is it manifested as being particularly true than us trying to get the gospel to other folks. All right, so John 3:16, it's the greatest verse in the Bible. I was asked to write an article on this, and man, I'm a poor writer. I hate it. And nobody asks me to write anything once they've read anything I've written. But they asked me to write about John 3:16, and the word, I mean, it's the whole thing is the word so. I so loved Paul that if I could have, I'd have swapped places with him, because I hated to see him in the agony that he was in. And you know what? He so loved me, he would have never let me swap places with him. The depth of love is manifested in just all kinds of ways. And I'm telling you this, I'm not preaching to you now. I'm telling you this from me. I need to constantly make sure that I'm loving people like I ought, because it slips. You know, the Luke chapter 10, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And I don't mean this sacrilegiously, but Lord, you ought to meet my neighbor. I'm not kidding. Okay, here we go. I had it wasn't brand new, but it was new to me, a Ford F-150 crew cab pickup truck with a deck on the back, painted, man. And then my daughter had a Ford Ranger black pickup truck and got a couple other dumb cars in the driveway. And my neighbor paints with white spray paint his gravel hauler trailer in his driveway. And the wind blew all that white paint on all four of my cars. And he gets over there when I'm telling him that, and he gets right down on the hood and he says, "Well, you see, the paint is going this way, so that means it was from this direction." I mean, he's what an idiot. So he gave no account of the fact the car could have been turned the other way. You know, so. And he didn't want to pay for any of it. So finally I threatened him with a pistol and he paid for... No. He did pay for my truck and one of my cars to have that stuff buffed out and all that kind of thing. So, and you know what? You know what else is a problem? He's a convicted child molester. If you look it up on the international or the national thing, he lives literally right across the street from me. So I've got all kinds of reasons why I don't love him. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. We'll come back to that one. But God, He so loved me that Jesus was willing to take the penalty for what I did on Himself. And He's asking me to love other people in the same kind of way. Well, okay, love's power is a motive. Now, I kind of talked about this for a long time because it dawned on me a long time ago. And this is particularly true, it dawned on me in relationship to marriage, that love is a decision. That's why Bonnie Raitt's wrong. Love is not an emotion. People get this all mixed up. Love is a decision. I mean, you can go to Romans chapter 5 and prove that. We're not going to go there, but I mean, that's what that's all about. While we were yet enemies, Christ died for us. Why? Because God decided to love us. I mean, we were filthy. We were unlovable, but God decided to love us. And so, when we start talking about love, when I start talking about my neighbor, but I love Paul, because he was my brother, see? So you see the difference there with that. But love is a decision. You talk about marriage, you know. People say they fall out of love. No, they just hadn't made the right decision in life. Because you decide to love your mate. You change, don't you? Boy, we talked to Rick here. All of us, when we talk about marriage, we are not the same people that we were 40 years ago. We don't look the same. We don't act the same. I mean, we're just not the same. And in the process of all of those years, a decision continually takes place about stuff. And I mean, and you get older and your most dominant characteristic becomes more and more and more dominant. And then if you're kind of a tense person, you get more and more and more tense, you know, and all that kind of thing. And so you look at these folks and you say, "Well, I didn't marry you." No, you didn't. And they didn't marry you either. "I don't love you anymore." Well, you haven't made the right decision. And it's true with everything. It's true with family. It's true with friends. It's true with brethren. It's true with everybody. So, I was going to say Sister Bonnie Raitt. I don't know if she's a sister or not. But Bonnie Raitt is wrong. You can make a heart feel what it doesn't feel. God did for us. And then we can for others, because love is a decision. And that's the fundamental key to the whole thing right there. Somebody might irritate me. We'll talk about irritation here in a minute. But so what? That has nothing to do with me deciding to love them. All right, so it never ever fails to seek the best. I got my neighbor up there. I've already introduced him. And and I wasn't. I just wouldn't talk to him. You know, wouldn't look at him. He was anathema to me. It was kind of like a wall I put up in my mind from, and his house is a dump. There's no sheetrock in his house because he's let his roof go so bad. All the sheetrock has crumbled and fallen into the floor, and he swept it out. Okay, I'm not going to go any more about my neighbor. Okay. But it doesn't. I mean, you know, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It love never fails. What does it never fail to do? It never fails to seek the best for somebody. Why? Because it's decided to love. It's made that decision. And once it makes that decision, I mean, it doesn't look back. You know what I mean? You may have to make that decision more frequently than you'd like to, but you continue. I should continue to make that decision. I should continue to never, ever fail to seek what's the very best for these people that I come in contact with. So, boy, if you make that decision, what it does, it is a shield of protection for your heart. I mean, you go to Cain and Abel. Boy, there's a situation that got totally out of hand. I mean, and I don't mean that in a catty kind of way. It did, didn't it? Because Cain did not love his brother, and he didn't love God either. You know how that goes with the coupling of those two things. It wound up being murder. And God told him that. God said, sin is crouching at the door and its desire is for you. And he just did not listen. And sin will always carry you further than you want to go. I mean, I didn't know that. I didn't listen to that when I was young. And I hope the young people here listen to that point. Not that I'm saying it, but it's the truth. I don't think Cain, when the sacrifice thing went off, he wasn't thinking, I'm going to kill you. It wasn't at that point. And he didn't love his own brother and killed him because of that. Frustrations. You know, do people frustrate you? I mean, people frustrate me, but if you really, really love them, frustration won't last very long. Now, here I go again. I never do this. I got two grandchildren. One of them's a little boy. He's 2.5. And I never, ever tell grandchildren stories. But I did this once here recently because it makes the point. I was in my yard shoveling, you know, and he wants to be out there with me, which I love that. That's great. So I'm doing this. Shoveling. I'm doing this shoveling. He's standing right there. I can't get him out of the way. You know how that is. And so I do this and I come up and he jumps on the shovel and rides it. Like it's a toy. Now how long did I stay mad at him? I didn't get mad at him. You know why? Because I love him. I think he's cute. And he gives me kisses. And he hugs my neck. Now, if there was another kid there that I didn't love, I'd have whacked him with a shovel. But not literally, but there's the difference right there, isn't it? You got somebody that you love that you die for, as opposed to somebody that you don't. So you treat them different. And it shouldn't be that way. See, to me, when that happened, it just was a perfect illustration of how I need to think about people differently. So, you know, you got, well, how many times did God get frustrated with Israel, but it didn't last? Why? How many times has God been frustrated with me or you, and it passes by? Why? It's because of how much He loves. It changes, and I got everything italicized there. If I will get my love straight, I mean everything in life will be different. Everything. And I've got this manipulated by circumstances thing. Do you know who Viktor Frankl is? You ever heard of him? You ought to read some stuff by Frankl. He's dead now. He was in a German concentration camp and lived, of course. Came out of there, became a psychologist. Has written a lot of very interesting things. But the deal about Frankl is, you know, what everybody wants in life is to have a certain measure of control. All right? That's just normal. We all do that. What they try to do in a concentration camp is strip you of every bit of your dignity and take all of your control away from you and give it to them. They want to control you absolutely. Your mind, your thoughts, your emotions, everything. And he said, he concluded, there's one thing that they could not control. And that was how he was going to react to their abuse. Now you think about that one. They would torture him. They would starve him. They would do all kinds of things. They would terrorize him. But the one thing they could not control was how he responded, how he maintained an attitude about what they were trying to do to him. And for us, it would be love. I mean, we can't control the stock market. I don't think I'd want to if I could. And I can't control a whole bunch of things, although I try to. You know, we all try to do that in our life. But there's one single thing that I do have control over. And that's whether or not I decide to love people like I ought to. All right. So with that, when love is absent, it's irritating, and it is an irritation. Becky, my wife, and I went to a meeting up in Napa. And a really fine congregation up there. Not quite as big as y'all's. It's got a real nice building in that fan-shaped stuff, you know. And we came in and we sat down. And didn't know it, but we sat in this elderly lady's seat. Okay. And she came down the aisle. And I was kind of up front somewhere, so I observed this. She came down the aisle, and I mean, flames were coming out her eyeballs at Becky because Becky was in her seat. And then about 3 or 4 minutes later, this somebody told her, "Yeah, that's the visiting preacher's wife." Well, everything changed. It was all different then. She was happy to give Becky, since Becky was the visiting preacher's wife, because now that she had clout about that. And, you know, you just think about how people act. Somebody gets their parking place, or somebody gets their seat, or where are they coming from with that? Has their whole world been disrupted? A lack of love is irritating, and it is an irritation. Yeah, just moving along with that. Selfish suicide. In the Corinthians passage, it says, "If I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing." So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, well, that's just suicide's all that is. And it's a really selfish suicide because you don't get anything out of it. You see how dramatic that terminology is there? If I give my body to be burned, if I give it, somehow circumstances arise where they're looking for martyrs, and I jump out and say, "I'll be one." But if I don't have love when I do it, it didn't do a thing for me. That's nothing but committing suicide for no good purpose. A purpose which God does not appreciate. And, you know, you've got the older brother with the prodigal son. And then you got the publican with the two guys who went up to the temple to pray, who stood over there and just complimented himself up one side and down the other. And I mean, it's just suicidal is what they're engaging. All right. So impatient. I tell you, I ride motorcycles. I love motorcycles. I've always loved motorcycles. Started riding when I was like 1964 or so, whatever. But I'll tell you the big mistake that you better not make when you ride motorcycles is getting impatient. You start losing your patience, you're going to pull out in front of somebody and you're going to get run over. That's just the way it is. Just a little added wisdom for you in that. Love is patient. Patient with people whom we think ought to be beyond where they are. Patient with all kinds of circumstances and situations which, if we're not patient, they're going to frustrate us to no end. Patient with all of the things that happen to us in our lives so that we can be a good Christian light and a great example to the people who see us and who stand around us. You ever heard of the Voyage of the Endurance? You ought to read that sometime. And I'm not going to go on about that, but you talk about patience and endurance. That is one of the most spectacular stories, true story, I've ever read in my life. So, Voyage of the Endurance. So, okay. Bitter jealousy. When love is absent, people can become bitter. So I'm going to ask you real clearly right now. Do you have bitterness in your heart about something? You know, the James passage, James chapter 3, talks about the wisdom that is from below is earthly and demonic, and it's characterized by bitter jealousy and all of these different kinds of things. Lately I've kind of capitalized on the word bitter. It's become a word that's kind of stuck in my mind because I see this. I see people that are bitter. And I think I see Christians that are bitter about whatever might be, particularly political situations or whatever. But bitterness is a sign of a lack of love. We don't have anything to be bitter about. Craig Ferguson, I got his name up here. I don't listen to him very much. He's a talk show host. But he said something that really stuck in my mind. He's talking about living back in Ireland. I think it's Ireland or Scotland, one of them places overseas. But he's one of those two. And he talked about how failure is treated in the place where he lived. And failure's just not tolerated. If you fail, that's it. You're a failure. You're pushed to the side. You're dismissed. You're dumped. And it's over with in your life. And he was rejoicing about how great it is to live in the United States. Because they just don't look at it like that. Failure is not one of those things. People fail all the time until they finally achieve what they want to achieve. And he said, if I still lived back there, I would be living in quiet bitterness. I think people live like that. Husbands are told not to be bitter toward their wives. Well, why would anybody ever be bitter toward your wife? You know exactly why they'd be bitter toward their wife, don't you? And wives can be bitter toward their husbands. And people can be bitter toward the church because it's not what they want. I mean, there's just all kinds of reasons why bitterness can crop up. And bitterness is a horrible plant that is a sign of a lack of a decision to love. Is what it is. So, all right. Selfish ambition. I get sick of competition among preachers. I just want to vomit. And I'm going to be real frank right now. It's a lack of love is what it is. And I get real sick and vomitous when brethren suggest, even trying to be funny, that there's competition among preachers. There's a lack of love when they do that. You don't know what kind of seed you might be planting in somebody's heart, so don't do it. I know I said that kind of strongly, and I've only known you for a minute. So I don't mean to be presuming, but I'm telling you it's the truth. don't ever make the mistake of intimating competition. You just don't know what that might do to somebody. All right, so, and that's that love thing. I mean, it just really is. Where there's selfish ambition and self-seeking in the heart, don't boast and lie against the truth. That's that James passage. All right, so envy, we'll just skip that. When love is present, success and failure are measured totally differently. Is that not true? If love is there, I mean, whether you're a preacher or an elder or a congregation member or whatever, if love is there, the measurement of success is completely different than when love is not there, when there's selfish ambition. Love suffers long and is kind with it. Lots of people are me. I'm an example of that. I'm long-suffering, but sometimes I'm just not very kind. I'm long-suffering, and I'm wanting to tell everybody how long-suffering, how long I've suffered with all of that. And there's a lack of kindness with that. It doesn't parade itself. Our society has a problem with this. And our young people, you've been culturalized into this kind of society. So you need to think about that. Love, are we on the same page here? Love doesn't parade itself. It doesn't do it. That's a false value that society has embraced that Christians should not embrace. All right. Talking about smooth water, that's just kind of the deal that goes along with that. Love does not make water turbulent. It makes it smooth. You ever been on rough water? You ever been on real rough water? One of the most terrifying things I've ever heard, my dad was in the Navy during World War II. And he was in two typhoons, which, you know, South Pacific, all that kind of thing. And he said, you would walk on the floor, and then you would walk on this wall, because the ship rolled so far. Then you'd walk on the floor, then you'd walk on that wall. And they were taking water down the stacks, water down the smokestacks of the ship. It was rolling so hard. There's a big difference between that kind of water and the kind of water that ought to be true in a church. That water is produced by love. It's produced by people who decide to love and to care for one another in the right kind of way. All right. Manifestations of love. It shares a kinship with purity of heart. Now you just think about that for a minute. True love comes from a pure heart. If I ain't loving like I ought, my heart's not pure like it ought to be. That's the problem right there with that. It's just the way it is. True love understands the difference between mercy and sacrifice. One of my favorite sermons to preach is Matthew chapter 12. I preach it whenever I go away in a meeting, because I'm not going to preach it this week because it isn't in the topic stuff. But that's where Jesus says, if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. So, I'm just asking you right now, do you know the difference between mercy and sacrifice? That is a fundamental manifestation of love. So, I got to do the Passover on that. So, do you know the difference between traditions and commands? Man, I have run into this one. I've run into this one in the congregation where I preach. I've made it my goal to understand the difference between traditions and commands, and treat traditions as traditions and commands as commands. That's the same thing. It's kind of the same thing with mercy and sacrifice. I can't tell you how important this is. I can't tell you how it appears. It seems to me, I don't know about this congregation, I have no idea whatsoever. But it seems to me we got all kinds of people all over the country who do not understand the difference between traditions and commands. They just don't know. I was back in Alabama visiting my dad. There's a congregation, real small congregation, who decided not to have Sunday night services. Well, you would have thought they'd elected the Pope as the president of their church. I mean, people were just bemoaning it like it was the greatest mistake that had ever been made. Sunday night services are nothing but a tradition. That's all they are. And yet they have become, in some people's minds, commands. Now, we're talking about love. The people who are bemoaning this congregation's decision as a loss of faith are not looking at their Bible like they ought to. And I'm telling you, they're not loving that congregation's decision as they ought. They're making a big mistake because they don't understand the difference between traditions and commands. Big problems can result out of that. All right. Patient with the weak. We talked about smaller steps earlier, and that's what that's about. Some people just can't go fast, and I got to be patient. And if I love them, I will be. Conclusion. Love is heartbroken at the failure of others. Now, I don't know about it. What did you think when Bill Clinton sinned with Monica Lewinsky? Did you get down on your knees and pray for him? Or did you rejoice? I know lots of brethren who seem to have a heart filled with joy that it took place. Buddy, that ain't love. That is not a Christ-like spirit. You may think what you want to about his politics, but we're not talking about politics with that. And that's true with anybody, and it's true with anything. We live in a gossip-oriented society. It is sick with gossip. And the dirtier, the better. What'd you think about Tiger Woods? It's infuriating to me that the same society that promotes the kind of activity that he fell in indicts him for engaging in it. That's wrong. And we ought to pray for him. And I have prayed for him and felt terrible for him. True love is heartbroken at the failure of others. It covers a multitude of sin. That's what 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8 says. It's willing to do that. It doesn't get on the phone and start scrambling around and calling all the friends, telling about this person who did this or that person who did that. It keeps it to itself. It's heroic action for others. Jude chapter 23. And on some save, having mercy, snatching them out of the fire. Are you willing, do you love enough to engage in heroic action to save somebody? Are you willing to go into a fire, into a burning place, and snatch them out of that, endangering yourself so that they might be saved? Sacrifice for others, John chapter 3 and verse 16, which kind of takes us back to the start of this with all of that. Let me tell you about my neighbor, the one that is a child molester and the one that spray painted my cars. I didn't talk to him for about a year. And then my heart got the best of me, as it should. And I went over and I apologized to him for the unchristlike attitude that I had had over that period of time. And I did it for his sake, because I wanted him to hopefully see that a Christian can repent. But I did it for my sake, because that's what God expected me to do. And I do the best I can to express love toward him
in spite of all his mistakes in his life. So this is this morning. What I want you to do is I want you to look in your heart and see if your love is right. And if it's not, then I encourage you to do what you need to do to change that. Here is our invitation song. If you need to come to Christ, do that. If we can pray for you, do that. Come to the front if you need to as we stand and sing.